Welcome to Legend Lore with Luis and Lorne, where we talk about Pathfinder 2nd Edition.
I'm Luis, and I'm a developer at Paizo working on the Pathfinder Lost Omens line. I've been playing tabletop RPGs for over 15 years, and I've written for dozens of Pathfinder products. I'm also the GM for Valiant, and I write the Monsters Physique blog here on the No Direction Network.
And I'm Lorne, and I've been playing RPGs for almost 20 years, write the Bend the Knee blog here on No Direction, and you can also watch me play in the Adventures and Three Ring Adventure podcasts. This week, we are talking about gnomes!
Now, before we get started, we do want to mention that although we do know a lot about what we're talking about when it comes to Pathfinder, we're not providing any kind of official answers. We're here to offer advice, and you can use that however you like. Remember that the official word from Paizo is the only official ruling out there. But don't forget, it's your game. Do what works best for your table.
All right, so, Luis, I want to start talking about gnomes by talking about elves instead. Okay? Because I have a theory that, you know, like, obviously, we fantasy players, we Pathfinder players, when we think about elves before fantasy or before Pathfinder, we think about, and even before D&D elves, we think about like Lord of the Rings and stuff, you know? But most people, right, are not into fantasy like we are. Like your average person at Kroger, you know, probably isn't going to think of Legolas. They might not even have seen Lord of the Rings. When you mention an elf to your average Nancy at Walmart, they might be thinking of like the Keebler elves or Santa's elves or even those silly little elves from Netflix's own Disenchantment. I didn't like that show that much, but I still watched all of it because I want to like it. And I really think that those elves for non-fantasy people, I'm convinced that to the rest of us, those are gnomes.
Yeah. I can see that, the Keebler elves and Santa's elves being little magical, pointy-eared people makes a lot of sense as gnomes. I feel like a lot of folklore ends up being tiny person with magic that ends up sometimes being called a dwarf, sometimes being an elf, sometimes being a gnome. Like, just depending on where you're from, they're all the same thing, just a different name, right?
Oh, and then the classic leprechaun. Is that the start of gnomes? Is that really where we started getting them from? Oh, and you think about it. Leprechauns are very well tied into fae as part of their mythology. Maybe that's kind of where our version of the fantasy gnome comes from.
It could be. I don't know. According to a site that you can never actually list as a resource in your papers, Wikipedia. Gnomes are from way back in the 16th century and are tied to magic and alchemy and stuff, but like, gnomes, I feel more than any other ancestry out there, end up getting buried and getting their own take. Dwarves are usually the same across most media. Elves are typically the same across most media.
Unless they're Santa's elves.
Unless they're Santa's elves. But I mean, like, Warcraft elves and Lord of the Rings elves and, you know, every other fantasy's take on elves tend to be pretty similar. Dwarves tend to be pretty similar. It's where gnomes really vary, I think, for a lot of places. I mean, even within D&D, gnomes were a playable race in 3rd edition. And then suddenly 4th edition rolls around. They're not a playable race right out of the gate. They get replaced with tieflings, and they're monsters now. They're a monster that you fight, and it's not till like PHB 2 or 3 that you can play as gnome. So it's just, you get a different take every time.
Well, and I think a lot of this might have to do with a fact that I hate to admit. I'm ashamed to admit that I don't actually like gnomes. You know, those who know me pretty well and know my style in fantasy pretty well, I like a gritty, grim, dark kind of fantasy, and gnomes are the antithesis of that.
More so than halflings?
Oh, yeah, more. Well, halflings are, like, famous for being, you know, rogues, and not even necessarily playful, fun-loving rogues, but sometimes, like, cruel rogues, you know? Gnomes don't really have that much of a reputation for being cruel, but there is a little bit there. And again, I think that comes back from like Irish mythology.
Sure.
Now, Luis, how do you feel about gnomes? Or am I alone in this boat?
I feel like I have my foot in the boat and I'm pushing you out to sea. I'm helping you with this boat, but not necessarily riding in the boat the whole time. Gnomes never particularly caught my eye, but I've never been opposed to people playing gnomes. I don't know, just I've always found other ancestries more interesting for the most part. So, no problems with gnomes. I just am rather indifferent to them.
Yeah, and there are parts of gnomes that I like a lot, and we're going to talk a little bit about those. One of the things about gnomes is that they're just absolutely chaotic all the time, but that doesn't follow that much suit with their ancestry traits. Like, most gnomes are going to be... Well, actually, maybe it does fall suit with their ancestry traits. Most gnomes are going to be small, but that's about where it ends, right? Gnomes are small, they've got pointy ears, but their hair, their skin can be almost any color on the rainbow, as long as you don't pick something that is grayscale, for reasons that we will talk about soon.
Correct. The Bostoman's character guide, which is what I use to reference a lot of this stuff, mentions that basically any appearance that a human can have in terms of skin tone and hair color and stuff, gnomes have that. And then they go beyond to wild hair colors like green and bright purples and blues and stuff like that. So it just, someone turns up all the different colors and saturations on humans and we can start getting gnome appearances.
When we're talking about gnome personality, gnome culture, they're kind of unified behind being curious, being inquisitive.
Mm-hmm. A lot of gnomes, at least in Pathfinder, yes, that's one stipulation we should make. It's like, we're talking about Pathfinder gnomes at this point. So throw out what you know about other gnomes, we're talking about Pathfinder gnomes. In Pathfinder, very curious. They're always seeking new experiences, which in turn means that their cultures are very focused on kind of grabbing new traditions where they can. You know, if they live near other settlements, they might adopt a local festival that the humans do every summer, right? Just because it's like, oh, it's something new. It's something else that we can latch onto. And also the fact that they're so unique in their culture and sensibilities means that for the most part, most other ancestries don't tend to hang out with them in a settlement. Most settlements end up being gnome only or end up being a very high gnome population with gnomes as the majority. So yeah, I don't know. There's the thing about gnomes being just kind of so all over the place. It's hard to kind of nail down a strict culture for them. That kind of encompasses the majority of gnome populations, which is both good and bad, right? Like, you don't want to say that all gnomes are X or all gnomes are Y. But it's really hard to give someone an elevator pitch on what gnomes really are in the process.
All right, no, I got it. I figured it out just now. Here's the elevator pitch for gnome culture.
Mm-hmm.
Gnome culture is ADHD.
Sure.
Done. That's it. That's their whole culture. Unifies them all, except for the bleachlings. Do you want to talk a little bit about the bleachlings?
So, the reason gnomes are the way, a lot of the gnomes are the way they are, and constantly seeking new experiences, is because of this thing called the bleaching, which is a weird physiological aspect of gnomes, where because they're, a lot of them have innate magic abilities and are kind of made up of magic, if they don't experience strong emotions or new feelings or excitement or just new experiences, what will happen is that magic will slowly drain out of them and in the process take the color out of a gnome. So if you can imagine a gnome with bright pink hair, if she just kind of hangs around and doesn't do much over time, the bleaching will take hold and drain that pink color out of her hair and just leave her with, you know, a shock of bright white hair or just plain black hair. And that can, over time, eventually just take out the entirety of a gnome's color from their body, leaving them just kind of a grayscale human, or a grayscale person that has no color other than what they're wearing. And that's interesting. But the big problem with that is that most of the time when a gnome undergoes the bleaching, they die. So for most gnomes, avoiding the bleaching is avoiding death. And that's why it's such a big deal. There are some gnomes that survive and then they get to just kind of continue life without worrying about that anymore. And that's cool. That's good for them. They end up becoming kind of more mellowed out in the process. But for the most part, if you're a gnome, you want to avoid this bleaching so you don't die. And that's why you kind of, in the sense of like a shark always has to keep moving, you always have to keep finding new stuff to do.
And this is due to the fact that in Pathfinder, gnomes are canonically migrants from the first world, the world of the Fae. And as they've come here, as they've adapted to Galarian life, the magic energies of the first world that were sustaining them there are obviously no longer completely sustaining them. So they supplement that lack of first world energy with new experiences and stuff.
Correct. If a gnome happens to live on the first world, they typically don't have to worry about the bleaching because the first world is enough to keep them up and running without worrying about that. Keeps restoring that magic and keeps them going.
Luis, is there any precedent for a gnome getting over the bleaching, coming back from it, getting their color back?
Actually, I don't think there is. There is definitely a precedent of gnomes surviving the bleaching and just living on as bleachlings, as they're referred to, but I don't know if there's ever been a story or any existing NPC where they became a bleachling and then somehow got that magic back into them and restore their color. I could see maybe if a bleachling made their way to the first world that could happen. But, you know, that's the perfect story to tell at a table. That's the perfect story for a player character to be the first, right?
And it really gives you just an idea of, even though the bleaching seems silly because it drains the color from a gnome and makes them look like an old television. It seems silly like that, but that gives you an idea of how serious it really is, since most don't get over it and they die.
So speaking of all this magic that gnomes that gnomes are privy to and kind of connected to, there's an interesting thing with gnomes is rather than having ethnicities much like you know them for humans or anyone else like that, their ethnicities are really tied to their connection to magic. Gnomes that grow up in deserts and stuff, you know, they might end up having darker skin and things like that, or gnomes up in frosty, cold regions might have paler skin and paler hair and stuff like that. That kind of common appearances that come with different regions is totally just fine among gnomes. You know, you can have your gnome look based on where they come from or similar ethnicities from the region. The big thing that might affect their appearance and who they really are is their connection to magic. In the world of Pathfinder, there are four different types of magic. There's arcane, divine, primal, and occult. And each of these four traditions of magic can affect gnomes differently. So when a gnome is born and is first growing up, the more prevalent magic around them tends to shape them in such a way that it becomes one of these gnome ethnicities. So if you grew up near the first world, like a first world rift or something, you're going to be one type of gnome. Whereas if you grow up in, I don't know, a place where there was a big divine battle thousands of years ago and there's still remnants of divine magic around, that's going to shape you into a different type of gnome. So the four ethnicities presented in the character guide are the Fel Gnomes, who are kind of creepy, weird-looking gnomes with, like, big eyes and freaky grins that are tied to occult magic. Fae Child Gnomes, which are your common everyday gnomes, the more typical gnomes that you're used to seeing, they have connections to primal magic. Glimmer Gnomes have connection to divine magic, which gives them a lot of illusion power that gives them like bright hair colors, and then they kind of shimmer and glimmer with light and stuff that lets them, you know, turn invisible and things like that. That's where that Glimmer Gnome name comes from. And finally, Keenspark gnomes are tied to arcane magic, and they, a lot of the time, are the types of gnomes that go out and really try to build stuff for their own, using their own wits and skills and stuff. And they have the most, like, human-like appearance out of all the gnomes. They have this kind of common, everyday, like, oh, brown hair, blue eyes kind of style, rather than the big pink hair and stuff like that that most gnomes have.
And what's neat is that each of these gnome ethnicities has all of the overlap with the gnome heritages, right?
Yes.
So, from your gnomish heritage, you could be a chameleon gnome. So, all of your hair and your skin, it changes due to magic around you. You could be fey touched, so that you have a little bit more of that connection with the first world. You could be a sensate gnome, so you see and you hear and you smell just in stronger amounts.
You could also be an umbral gnome, which, because of your connection to shadows and darkness and stuff, lets you see in the dark. Might be a wellspring gnome, which is pulling on the traditions other than primal and getting a cantrip from one of those four traditions. There's also the vivacious gnome that has extra energy from the first world flowing through them and gives them a resistance to negative energy because of that strong energy within them.
When you're making one of these gnomes as a character, something that any choice you make is going to have, you're going to have 8 hit points, you're going to be small size, you're going to have a speed of 25 feet.
Your ability boosts are focused on constitution and charisma. That lack of connection to the first world means you have to be pretty hardy to survive outside of the first world. That's where con kind of really ties into it. And it also explains your 8 hit points compared to other small ancestries only getting 6 hit points. But you have an ability fallout in strength. You're small. I mean, you can't be expected to be the strongest of people out there.
You know common, obviously, because you're from Galarian, and almost everyone from Galarian knows common. You know gnomish, and you know sylvan. You know, I'd be interesting to hear some etymological differences between gnomish and sylvan. How did those split, you know? How similar are they, I wonder?
I wonder if they both have kind of a same root, like romantic languages.
Yeah. You know,
who knows? It also, I guess, depends on when gnomish and sylvan came about. I assume sylvan was just kind of always about with the first world.
Yeah.
Maybe gnomish was developed once the gnomes left the first world and they needed a different language to work with.
What if Sylvan is more difficult for most normal mortals to kind of understand and hear and pronounce? What if they developed gnomish just kind of to bridge the gap?
Could be.
Well, in addition to those three, you also get a number of additional languages equal to your intelligence modifier, and you get all the normal ones like Draconic or Dwarven or Elven.
Finally, I mean, other than your traits, it's not that you're humanoid and a gnome for the purposes of all spells. And
or Fae, if you take Fae Touch Gnome.
That too. But you gain low light vision, which makes a lot of sense. You have pretty good eyes. Probably comes from that first world connection where maybe there's that extra magic in your eye that empowers what you can see.
Just like any other ancestry in Pathfinder or almost any other role-playing game, you can build your character however you like. A wizard, a fighter, a bard, a druid, any of these would work well. But we do have some concepts presented here for you. An idea of some more typical gnomes that you might see throughout the world. Or at least maybe a gnome that me or Luis would play. And as part of this segment, we have my simultaneous most and least favorite thing that we do in this. The silly voices / bad accent part of this. And I wrote a quote for us. So, Luis, you and I can use this quote for gnomes. And it's really a bad one. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping that our patrons will go on the Discord and help us pick up quotes for the next episode. This quote is, I've got a pocket full of coppers and a pouch full of cheese, but my backpack is full of imagination.
So, it says bad accent. What if I just do a voice that doesn't have an accent?
As long as this is genuinely your attempt to do a gnome. Yeah, instead of disingenuously, as long as this is genuinely your attempt to do a gnome, it's okay.
Okay, I will be anti-disingenuous with this attempt. Who went first with the dwarves? Do you remember?
It was you. Do you want me to go first?
Yeah, you got to go first. Okay. Now. We got to trade
off. We'll trade off, but that means I'm assigning you a voice. The second person to go has to do a Bleachling voice.
Oh, okay. Then that's fine.
See, that's fine. See, that's fine. All right. So one type of character you might see is the classic gnome inventor. You know, like gnomes are so curious that it makes sense that they would discover all these different ways to put things together and make crazy contraptions. I think that's a great one. And for a name for this character, gnomes have pretty crazy names sometimes. So I really leaned heavily into that. This gnome is Fizzle Snorker Bleegenblop, a.k.a. Fizz, because gnomes also like nicknames, especially when their names are a little bit harder to pronounce. Another gnome could be maybe like a gnome bard, you know, with their love of all these new experiences. It seems like they would gravitate really well to art. So that makes a lot of sense to me. For this gnome, I still went with the ridiculous route, but in a different way. So gnomes all often collect a lot of different names. So this is Gertie Ironbones Margarita Hoopenstein. I don't know where these came from, but I apologize to everyone for having to hear them. And the last gnome I came up with, this is really because the thing I do like about gnomes a lot is the whole fey flavor behind them. I like that they came from the first world and they kind of still have a foot in it. So I think maybe I could lean into a gnome sorcerer using like the fey bloodline. And that's a gnome I would actually play if you know, I had to make a gnome character. And I toned down the silliness name for this one. Because you don't have to have a silly name. This is Yesh Harrowswell. And I'm going to do my bad gnome voice for one of the other two. For the two that have silly names. Because when I think of how gnomes talk, I think of them as being sounding a little bit silly and maybe a little bit fast, like they're excited to get to the next part of the sentence. And you know, they have like ridiculous concepts because, you know, they're part fey. So here's going to be either Fizzle Snorker Bleebenblops or Gertie Ironbone Margarita Hoopenstein's version of this sentence. Okay, let me get in the mood here. Okay. Oh, okay, I've got a pocket full of coppers and a pouch full of cheese, but my backpack is full of imagination.
I like that.
Yeah.
All right, so for my builds, gnomes, I feel, very naturally gravitate towards things like druids and witches and kind of fey-adjacent stuff. I mean, the obvious gnome build is a barbarian with a ripsaw glaive that cuts people off, people's arms with its chainsaw. But I decided to go, I guess it's not too far off from the common stuff. My first idea was a gnome alchemist, which feels very gnomish. But the thing that their deal is that they are looking to create concoctions out of the weirdest reagents, and that's how they save off the bleaching. I imagine them as having like a little notebook that says, or that has like a list of different things, like, you know, I don't know, tree bark and sap and all this other stuff. And it just has like then a different, it's a big table that shows all the things that they've mixed together and what the results are. So, you know, eventually you get weird things like dragon eyes and manticore spines and all that stuff to create new alchemical concoctions.
I like that on one side. I like that you have like a blueberry muffin, mm-hmm. and then under that is a week old blueberry muffin, but one of them is crossed out because it didn't work.
Yep. So this gnome's name is nowhere near as ridiculous as Lauren's gnome names. I gave him the name Yig Laminar. That's a fantasy name. There you go. Number two here on my list is a gnome investigator. I think I like this one the most. That they are looking to solve the unsolvable. How best to stave off the bleaching by doing something no one's ever been able to do, which is, you know, solve crimes, you know, cold cases and stuff like that. And I think it'd be pretty exciting to constantly be on the lookout for stuff. And that does run into the problem, though, where, like, if a criminal, you eventually get to know criminals and evidence and all that stuff so well that in a kind of Sherlock Holmes style way, you can kind of just solve stuff just by looking at it. So they're always looking out for even more ridiculous and complicated and difficult cases. And they go by the name of Pally Highseeker. There you go. And finally, you know, gnomes always looking for new experiences. Why not just travel all over the world and see everything that you can see? And I think that fits very well with the ranger, who I gave the name of Tovin Norbright. Uh-huh. Fantasy names, sometimes they're just definitely names like that. I hope those are all fun ideas for fantasy names. I like the gnome ideas, the character names, but the names are always there. Anyway. So, of those three, if one of them had a voice, I feel that Pally Highseeker is most likely to be a bleachling. And after some time, you know, they succumb to the bleachling just because they got so good at solving crimes. Like, solving crimes didn't do it, and the bleaching set in, but they managed to survive and continue to solve crimes at this point. But now everything is rote. Everything is just kind of, I'm used to doing all of this. So, I don't know. Maybe Pally Highseeker is the type that says things like, I've got a pocket full of coppers and a pouch full of cheese, but my backpack is full of imagination. And just kind of long-winded expressions that are bored with everything else going on.
I honestly think that the bleaching is kind of like the most interesting thing about gnomes, you know? Mm-hmm. I can't think of any other ancestries that you can play in Pathfinder that have this unique, like, disease curse that affects all of them, that they're all kind of bound together in and trying to... I just think it's cool!
Yeah, it's a good reason for a dramatic shift in personality in a character. So, like, whether or not you want to lean into that or be it as like, oh, yes, I now have my character that's a bleachling, or I want to avoid that as much as possible, and that's a pretty good character motivation that's just kind of built into every gnome.
Well, speaking of finding out new things and learning new experiences, we have some questions from our users on Discord. From user Cody Garrett Wells, how should the bleaching be handled in game? Is it widely ignored? Should the PCs who don't play chaotically be under constant threat of it?
So I feel, well, first off, let me say that I feel like not every gnome needs to be a chaotic character. They tend to not be lawful, but that doesn't mean you have to be chaotic. You don't have to always play them as just like spontaneous, over-the-top characters that I feel like a lot of people assume they are. So that suggests that there are gnomes that aren't ridiculous, over-the-top, spontaneous characters that manage to stave off the bleaching no problem and just go about with their everyday lives. If you are a player character, if you're playing an adventurer, most likely just going on your adventures and doing your adventuring is enough to stave off the bleaching. If you are in a game with lots of downtime, I don't know if you're playing Kingmaker or something like that, then maybe it should rear its head. But I don't think PCs really have to worry about it unless a player is intentionally like wanting it to come up in the game, or it's part of a key story element or plot element for your adventures. I don't know. Most gnomes are just fine with adventuring, I think, and that keeps the bleaching at bay.
I've got a different take on this from maybe a whole other school of thought. I think that this is where you have to really know who your PCs are, and especially if it's like a home game, like, you know who your friends are. Like, this is a lethal thing that hangs over the heads of gnomes. You know, a lot of us play these kinds of games to escape the terrible things about reality, like cancers. And you probably wouldn't want to make somebody who's going through some problems at home that might have to do with disease, you might not want to have to threaten their character with it either, you know? But I do think it's interesting, and if it's not something you're worried about, I would maybe, you know, say that if they're not experiencing enough newness, maybe their hair does go white, you know? Mm-hmm. I think it'd be neat.
Yeah, I guess it rearing its head, but not necessarily being so threatening that this gnome could die. But, you know, like you said, a bit of their hair turns white. Oh no, the bleaching is happening, but you still have a chance to stave it off, right?
Yeah. So from user Brian Lane, what are gnome settlements like?
So if you check out the Lost Omens character guide, it has a little sidebar with a few different settlements in there, but it doesn't really give you a good idea of what settlements are really like. I think the big thing to keep in mind when designing a gnome settlement or, you know, adding one to your game or whatever is a lot of them are just like typical other fantasy settlements, but they each tend to have some kind of quirk, some kind of gimmick that makes things exciting and fun and lively and just not boring for everyday life. That could be that maybe your city is, or your settlement is such that like people just constantly move out, so no one stays there for too long and they don't have to worry about the bleaching. There might just be like a lot of weird architecture and stuff that's constantly changing to just keep things shaking up. There could be like a weird transport system. Maybe like everyone has to, I don't know, bungee jump to get anywhere because the city is built on lots of tiers of elevation, and that keeps things constantly exciting. I think if you have something that can be the kind of thrill, the fun aspect of a settlement that keeps things interesting and staves off the bleaching, I think you have a gnome settlement. I'd recommend checking out the first edition Gnomes of Galarian player companion, which has, I think, 3 or 4 pages worth of different settlements, and they each have their own kind of little gimmick that you can use as inspiration for a settlement. But for the most part, they're just normal, and they have a particular thing or a set of things that keep life interesting from day to day.
Oh, and you really touched on what I was going to go with, so I'm just going to build on it. I think a good way to come up with that little gimmick is to just remember that gnomes are innovative pretty much by default, and then apply that to where that settlement is. If it's a settlement in a forest, maybe there's a lot of verticality to it. There's a lot of gnomish contraptions that raise people up to their treetop homes, and there's all these different levels on it. If it's a gnomish settlement in like a desert cavern, you know, maybe you've got all kinds of crazy ways that they're collecting water. I think you could just really tie your neat thing to where the location is. So from patron Jaina B, what are some common misconceptions about gnomes?
I think the biggest misconceptions, the thing I mentioned earlier, is that all gnomes have to be chaotic. No, they don't all have to be. I mean, first off, no ancestry is by default just one type of alignment, right? And more so with playable ancestries. But beyond that, I don't know. I think a lot of it just is what comes from other media that you brought in. You might expect, oh, all gnomes are very good at tinkers and adventurers and stuff like that because that's how they are in the Warcraft universe, right? Or you might expect them to look, if you hear the word gnome, you might expect them to look like a garden gnome with a funny hat and big beards and stuff like that. It's just, I think mostly what you bring in from other media, because they're always so different in other places and in other formats, just no one true gnome, and that means whatever you believe gnomes to be or what you've seen gnomes to be before are definitely not what you're going to expect gnomes to be here in Pathfinder.
Yeah, and just to kind of reinforce what you've already said with this, like, being neutral or even being lawful in no way, shape, or form contributes to how often you experience something new or exciting. You know, your personality doesn't have to do with that. From patron Channon, how do gnomes differ by location in Galarian?
I think this is really dependent on what kind of magic is around. Something like the World Boon probably exudes a lot of evil divine magic, which leads to a lot of glimmer gnomes around. I don't know. I don't think we really have a big explanation how they differ, other than, like, you know, their ethnicities. The interesting thing about gnomes, although a lot of them end up being different in terms of, like, how they stave off bleaching and stuff, the fact that that's kind of their core thing, their core goal, means that a lot of them end up being a lot more similar than you would realize. They all want exciting stuff to happen to them. They want to adventure or see interesting things and find new experiences. I think it really varies based on the magic and also what other people are around, right? Gnomes with other gnomes are much more different than gnomes when in a city of lots of humans, right? I wish I could give you some examples. I guess I just don't know gnomes in Galarian as well as I would like to answer this.
I kind of headcanon that gnomes are like sponges that just kind of soak up all of the culture around them. So that may be like a gnome from a place that's all about their blueberry muffins. They're too much into their blueberry muffins or something. You know, that's kind of how I've always pictured gnomes, but I don't think that's canon. But what's interesting is I did like the way you were talking about the different latent magics affecting what kind of ethnicity or how that gnome might be. I think that could go perfectly well with my sponge theorem of gnomes.
Yes.
From user Nate Wright, is there any precedent in the lore for gnomes who tap into the abyss to stave off the bleaching?
I don't think there is. There's not like a colony of cool demon gnomes or anything like that, but I feel like that's a perfect character hook. You know, you might end up being a demon summoner or something because of your connection to the abyss. I don't know if anyone's intentionally tapping into the abyss that isn't evil in the first place, right? Whether they're gnome or some other ancestry. No precedent. Definitely a cool idea. I would love to see what that gnome looks like, especially what hair color they end up with.
From co-host Lauren, hey, Luis, I just had an idea.
Yes.
Wouldn't it be neat if gnomes could have more uncommon heritages than the other ancestries due to how much they soak up the magic around them?
You mean like there would be more tiefling gnomes,
yeah,
and SMR gnomes and stuff? Yeah, I like that idea.
I think that's cool.
Yeah, whether or not they have any kind of connection in the lineage, it's just like, oh, well, oops, I hung out near the World Moon too much, and now I became a tiefling, right? Or something like that, just because my body's so good at absorbing that energy.
Yeah.
I like that quite a bit.
I do, too. I think I'm going to headcanon that. That's now how gnomes work in my games.
Good job.
So, much like how gnomes are always on the hunt for new experiences, old experiences have to end, which is why that's all we have for you today. So if you like this show or any of our other blogs or shows, please consider supporting us on Patreon.com at patreon.com/nodirection, because it's the support of our patrons that make this all possible. And if you'd like us to cover a specific topic, please let us know in the Discord. While you're at it, make sure you check out the rest of our other great content on the No Direction Network.
Until next time, I'm Luis.
And I'm Lauren.
Thanks for listening to Legend Lore. And as always, it's been legendary.